back. Joining us now for an encore performance this week is geologist, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Folk. Mickey, I enjoy these segments. I enjoy this one with you, and I enjoy the one I do with the editor of Astronomy Magazine. I'm just counting my lucky stars, no pun intended, that what happens when you and I talk about something isn't what's happening when the astronomer and I talk, because we'd have been hit by a few big rocks. But
well, the chances of an asteroid doing major damage to the Earth is, I think we put that somewhere between 1 and 10 million years on the 100% probability scale. The probability of a greater than 8.0 earthquake is 1 year. So we got our 8.0 last night. It was actually an 8.2. Where we talked about last week, where this earthquake storm was in northern Chile.
Yeah, so those 300 earthquakes they had, minor earthquakes they had last week, was a precursor to a big one, and I assume an 8.2 is a big one?
It's a giant one. We average one per year, so 7.0s, we get about 15 a year in the world, and the 8.0s are pretty rare.
Even their 5 aftershock's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. 6.2 aftershock, that's can be a very damaging earthquake. They had a 6.7 a couple of weeks ago, which started off this seismic activity. A 6.7, there was in Iran, a 6.7 killed 200,000 people, a decade ago or so. It very much depends on the part of the world, the types of buildings that are constructed. If you live in a mud hut that's not stabilized, and I have to admit, I do live in an adobe house, a 100-year-old adobe house that's not stabilized, you can be in serious problem. Luckily, where I am in the part of the world, we don't have big earthquakes.
Well, let's talk about the whole process down there in Chile, how this thing got started, this earthquake swarm. I mean, what was the geological activity? You said it was inaugurated by a 6.2, and then they had 300 minor earthquakes before getting the big one last night?
Well, that's correct. So it actually started with a 6.7, but what's curious about this area has been inactive for 137 years. The last big quake was in 1877, killed a bunch of people. With a tsunami in Fiji. So it is in a part of the world that's been called a seismic gap, meaning it has had no seismic activity for quite some time. This swarm indicates it's being reactivated, and then we had a big one last night. Luckily, it did very little damage. That part of Chile is very earthquake prone, and the buildings are very much built to modern day earthquake mitigating structures. It's interesting. It's at the trailing edge of the plate boundary, the Nazca plates underwriting the South American plate. Very shallow earthquake. 12 kilometers. Oftentimes these shallow earthquakes, giant shallow earthquakes, can be the ones that generate huge tsunamis. This tsunami was only 2 meters at its greatest in Chile. Six people dead. So the Chile really dodged a bullet on this one, Alan.
Can we describe the whole process? I know you told me that these plates are like on a conveyor belt. They're being consumed on one side of the conveyor belt, being enlarged on the other. What is the geological activity that started with this quiet area, had a kind of a wake-up call, 300 minor earthquakes, and then the big one? What's actually taking place?
Well, it's all has to do with plate tectonics, and the continents are composed of mainly of granite, which is relatively less dense. It's light compared to oceanic crust, which is basalt, a heavier rock. So it's all transported on, the crust is transported on top of a plastic mantle. And so it's this kind of big conveyor belt where oceanic crust is thrust under, continental crust is essentially devoured, and then we have the spreading centers in the ocean basins where new basaltic magma is being produced. So it really is a giant conveyor belt. Over periods of hundreds of millions of years, the continents collide and they break apart. They form supercontinents, and then they break apart. Now we have seven continents. It's been predicted in 200 to 250 million years, we will have two continents again.
So is it new magma coming up underneath the ocean that causes the oceanic plates to collide with, like, for example, the Ring of Fire plate or whatever we call it?
Well, yeah, that's where it you just look at it as a giant circular conveyor belt that at one end it's consumed and at the other end it's created, and it's gone on. We know it, the plate tectonic processes have gone on the Earth for something on the order of 2.5 billion years, more than 50% of the age of the Earth.
Is that why some of these coastal countries have quite ragged mountains right on their coast?
That's exactly right. So the Ring of Fire, where the continents are being consumed, goes all the way from the tip of Tierra del Fuego. It goes up the entire coast of South America, through Central America, through Northern North America, big subduction zone in the Oregon, Washington area, and into BC, continues all the way up to Alaska through the Aleutians, where all those active volcanoes are on the Ring of Fire, and comes down through Japan, which has some of the biggest earthquakes and have active volcanoes, through the Philippines and Indonesia, and out into Fiji, and to New Zealand. So it rings essentially the entire Pacific River or Pacific Ocean Basin.
A quiet area like we had in Chile that wakes up suddenly, did they have any precursor, or they just assumed that this particular area was quiet and likely to stay quiet? I mean, what sort of warning? I mean, we had that earthquake.
Well, we had 300 earthquakes over a week period preceding this. So oftentimes you get no warning. In this case, there was warning. A lot of times you just have a big quake. The first one's a giant quake. So you quite never know. But even though this area has been inactive, 137 years ago, it had a giant earthquake. So places, it's just like volcanoes, which become dormant and then all of a sudden wake up. Mount St. Helens had not blown up for how many centuries, and then all of a sudden we have a big volcanic eruption, but with some warning before that. We just never know how, you know, geologists and geophysicists can predict sometimes when something's waking up or coming out of a period of dormancy. But we have no idea the magnitude of a volcanic eruption. We have no idea the magnitude of the biggest earthquake in a swarm. And I don't think we'll ever be able to predict those sorts of things.
How far did the Earth move, you think, down there in Chile to cause that?
That has not been determined yet. In the earthquake of 1837, there's movements of up to 6 meters vertical.
Well, I'm just wondering how this area just woke up, that if this zone here that runs through downtown Atlanta, if it could just wake up one day as well.
No. I mean, yeah, that's not saying you couldn't have a pretty big earthquake, but historically there have not been no giant earthquakes. That area has been geologically, I mean, it's extinct, essentially. That doesn't mean you can't have some earth movements, but you're not connected to any plate boundaries, any active plate boundaries in Georgia, and there's no reason to think that that is going to change in the next 200 million years.
I understand. All right, what about Yellowstone? I mean, we know that that's... That's the big one, and they had a little bit of an earthquake just in the last couple.
Yeah, that's a much different situation. That's a hot spot. It's not really connected to active plate tectonics, but these hot spots are what generate the super volcanoes. There was a 4.8 earthquake in Yellowstone sometime in the last week or so. That's a pretty minor earthquake, but it was the greatest earthquake there since 1980. It does not indicate that the Yellowstone supervolcano is going to blow anytime soon. We have no evidence of that. There's about 2,000 small earthquakes a year on average in the Yellowstone area related to this magma body that underlies the park and the surrounding environs, and is responsible for the hot springs. Now, that said, in one of the United States' most destructive and largest earthquakes occurred in 1959 in West Yellowstone. It's commonly called the Madison earthquake or the Hebgen Lake earthquake. It was a 7.4, created a massive landslide. 28 people died. In today's dollars, that would be the second largest disaster area ever in the United States, second to Katrina.
But Yellowstone here, at least in North America, is the big boy, right? I mean, that is the one that would cause the most widespread damage?
It's the biggest earthquake. It's the biggest it is the biggest known supervolcano on the planet. It has historically produced the biggest eruptions, and it's the largest hot springs field in the world. There's more hot springs in Yellowstone than the rest of the world combined. So based on that, yes, that is a disaster waiting to happen, but once again, we don't expect that to happen. We expect that to happen sometime within 100,000 to 1 million years. Just north of where I live, 150 kilometers north is the caldera at around Los Alamos, New Mexico, called the Valles Caldera. That is a supervolcano, but it last blew 2.3 million years ago. So the real danger would be Yellowstone for the supervolcanoes, but we also, the most immediate danger from volcanoes in the world would have to be Vesuvius, which has erupted 15 times since with giant eruptions since the mid-1600s, and the other one would be Iceland, and we've talked before about how dangerous that is because not only is it on a hot spot, one of these mantle hot spots, it's also on a oceanic spreading ridge, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge.
So a 55-mile long magma chamber underneath Yellowstone. That's like catastrophic. If that thing were just...
It's huge. It's, to my knowledge, the largest in the world.
So, I mean, that thing would just have to burp and cause problems, wouldn't it?
Well, it did. If we got another supervolcanic eruption like happened 640,000 years ago, we would have mass extinctions. It would do unbelievable damage, especially in North America. You know, there'd be an area that would be completely buried under ash. Very large area.
Back to our buddies down there in Chile. If you were on the ground and you had an 8.2 going off beneath you, what would that be like?
It'd last a really long time. I've been in two earthquakes greater than 7.0. in 1997 in northern Chile near Ovalle. I was in La Serena, about 50 kilometers away. They last a long time. It's like being on the ocean on a wave, and you're bobbing up and down, and the bigger they are, generally, the longer they last. The second earthquake I was in was in near Arequipa, Peru, and I'm trying to remember, that would have been in the early, late spring of 2001. That killed people. I was 100 kilometers away from that epicenter.
Now, were you in these areas?
It's not a pleasant experience.
Were you in these areas hoping for an earthquake or just happened to be there?
Oh, no, I was working. I was trying to find copper deposits. I was on exploration projects at the time.
Well, now, when you said that an 8.2 would last for a long time.
But in the terms of minutes, the Earth would be moving, a couple of minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, perhaps longer.
And it'd be pretty violent?
Pardon?
It would be a very violent shake?
It doesn't really feel like a shake. More, it feels like the Earth is rolling underneath your feet.
Well, I remember that one that I felt that, you know, the epicenter was 1,000 miles away. It just felt like it was really deep. You know, I could tell there was some rumbling going on beneath me, and it took me maybe 15, 20 seconds to think, is that an earthquake?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it always happens. A few years ago, we had one about 4.8 on the other side of the Sandias here east of Albuquerque, and I woke up at 3 a.m. or something, and in bed, and I'm going, wow, that felt like an earthquake. And sure enough, it was. I've been in lots of earthquakes, lots of small ones, especially in Chile. When I last lived in Chile, I lived in an apartment that was in, you know, a few stories up off the ground, and we felt quakes commonly, and you'd feel the building just start to sway a bit. Now, this building was earthquake constructed, and it was designed to sway. They designed them to sway with the earth movements. That's what prevents them from collapsing.
Do you think it's over with down there, or you can have multiple aftershocks?
Well, generally what happens, and I'm going to say generally because no one, they're not a scientist on the face of the planet that would go out and predict what's going to happen next. But generally, when you have a big one like this, then the Earth, the strain, the tension in the Earth's rocks is mitigated, it's relieved, and you will have aftershocks. But generally, when you have a big one like this, you will not have another big one. That's not saying it's not going to happen. No one quite knows, but we would expect aftershocks to go on for a while. I would say that the chances of another 8.2 in this area are probably slim. But that said, it's all about probability.
Okay, what about on the other side of the plate? Does an earthquake in Chile necessarily mean that some other part of that ring of fire is going to be affected?
No, absolutely not. Got nothing to do with it. This is a local phenomena. All that will do is it will increase the strain at someplace else on the earth within the ring of fire.
The pressure must build up then quite a bit over time. And we're talking, what, centimeters that the earth will move in an area like down there in Chile before it finally it just had enough and has to release?
Well, generally, we calculate average movements, so active plate boundaries, the most active would move somewhere 1.5 to 3, perhaps 3.5 centimeters a year. But then you have this catastrophic release where you release rocks move much more than that, but averaged out over the course of 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years, you can say, okay, this averages 2.5 centimeters or about an inch a year, but they don't move gradually generally with with some exceptions. For instance, last time we talked about Hollister, California, a place I've been and documented the creeping earth damage there. But they usually move catastrophically in fits and starts.
Why then, like in California, do they have so many tremors? Are they still waiting? I mean, is the big one out there? And I know you told me this is a segment on its own, but we got about 5 minutes. If do these tremors that they constantly feel in California necessarily signal that the big one is right around the corner?
No, no. That, you know, that San Andreas, I mean, there's many faults there, but the big transform fault is the San Andreas fault. Various segments of it are locked up. Various segments of it, which I just mentioned, are around Hollister in north central California, creep. So the areas that are locked up and haven't moved for a long time are the danger zones, and that would be specifically around San Bernardino, California.
I've got friends in San Bernardino, California.
Yeah, so, well, I wouldn't choose to live there.
Well, my wife has a cousin that actually lives right on top of that fault line up in Oakland, California.
Yeah, and remember what happened in Oakland in 1989 during the World Series. So, not, you know. I would, you know, before I build a house or buy a house anywhere, I would always want to know what the seismic risk is. Just as I, you know, I live a mile from the Rio Grande here, and I have a farm, so my farm is on an old oxbow of the river, and you know, I'm in some danger of flooding from the river if the levees break. You know, that song that Led Zeppelin made famous, which is an old blues song from the 1920s, when the levee breaks. If the levee break here, I could be in trouble. But you look at the risk and the probability, and you accept that risk, or you don't.
I find it fascinating, being a geologist, that you would actually want to know what was beneath you, where most people wouldn't give it a second thought.
Well, I'm a scientist. I'm curious. You know, this talk I go around and give recently about geological catastrophes waiting to happen, and the kickstart for that was your program. You're the one that led me into that idea of doing that newsletter, and which evolved into a talk. I find these things fascinating. Some people find that talk very depressing, but hey, you know, it's life is a death sentence for every person, every animal, every plant on the species on the planet. Every species will go extinct at some time. So it all becomes a matter of probability. I find these geologic catastrophes fascinating, basically because the chances of them happening to me in my lifetime are so slim.
But an 8.2, you say at least one a year.
On average, I'm not going to say at least one per year. On average, we have one earthquake per year greater than 8.0.
What's the largest, most powerful?
We could have another one tomorrow. Not have another one for 2 years. It's all statistical probability.
What's the most powerful one ever recorded?
9.5 near Valdivia in southern Chile in 1960.
And how much more significant is that than the one they just felt?
Well, that's basically, do the math, it's a power of 10, the Richter scale, so it would be at least 100 times more powerful.
My God, that thing must have been violent.
I want to say 140 times more powerful if I'm doing the... You know, I'm trying to think in logarithmic scale in my head. So, you know, I was pretty much a math whiz when I was in high school and college. So hopefully I got that right. But a lot bigger.
Hey, it's been fun, Mickey, but we're out of time. I look forward to it. Twice in 1 week. Who'd ever thought?
Yeah, well, we had to get this one on in a timely basis. So I appreciate you asking me to do this, Alan.
Thank you, Mickey.
Thank you, Alan.
All right, bye-bye.